I have a friend, a couple of friends, but one I'm thinking of in particular is labeled schizophrenic. And she goes through these cycles of being really, really disabled, socially, really dysfunctional, unable to care for herself. And she gets hospitalized regularly, she goes through cycles, she gets hospitalized, she gets put on meds, and she stabilizes, and she's good for a year or 6 months, and then she's good enough and she decides it's time to go off her meds, she goes off her meds, and she crashes again, and the cycle has gone over and over and over, like for years and years, and her mom just wants her to stay out of drugs, because every time she goes off her drugs, she crashes and she becomes totally dysfunctional. She can't work, she wanders the streets, she can't pay bills, she's completely dysfunctional. So meds can be helpful. That doesn't mean that she's got a disease of excess dopamine, or I agree with all those things, but in some cases meds are helpful for people, aren't they?
For a very short time, meds can be helpful. But the problem, yes, what you just described is quite common. People wanting to come off, doctors telling them they have to take the drugs for the rest of their lives, not fully informing her. I doubt, and please let us know, did the doctor inform her of the risks or non-medical alternatives that she could
take? I doubt it. She knows it, and that's why she keeps going off. But then she crashes, and
well,
you know, it may just be because you become addicted
problem.
To the drug, right? And then you crash when you come off.
But she go off cold turkey or gradually?
Right. Those are all good questions, and I don't know.
Yeah, because a lot of people have terrible effects. These drugs are not like, and some of you in this room may have taken them, but. You know friends like Angela's friend. If you suddenly stop, your system can't handle suddenly stopping the drug because it's like you're a rubber band, you stretch it, and then suddenly you stop, and then the rubber band contracts like that. It's your body can't take the change, the abrupt change. So that adds to the suffering. It's called a rebound effect. Which some of you may know about. Body can't handle it. And the doctors generally don't warn you. You know, although some probably do now more than, but is she like trying to get some other type of help?
I think she probably doesn't have a good support system.
There's no support system.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And that's because she's difficult to. You know, when she's rubber banding all the time, bouncing around in these different phases. But I guess the point of my comment is, I think that is it true that some people are helped by...
Some people are what?
Stabilized. By neuroleptics.
Well, what you mean by stabilized... You mean that they don't have bad effects from them and they just keep...
Well, or maybe they have bad effects, but they're able to function.
But they're able to function.
You know, maybe.
Sure.
Yeah.
Any drug. Mm. However, the risk is the longer she's on or the longer anybody's on, and some of us know of people who have been on them for years and years, it just wreaks havoc with the person's health, in general outlook. And if you're on a low dose, and I'm not an expert, so I'm just by any means, but all I know in general rule of thumb is if you have to take the drugs, and I'm paraphrasing Dr. Bregan and others, experts who've helped people come off the drugs, take the least amount of drugs for the shortest possible time. That's a word of mouth. Kevin?
I guess my answer to
that's
that...
That's all I see.
My answer to that question would be, when I took the antipsychotics, I was managed you know, I had very little emotion. I just didn't want to get out of bed. So I guess it manages you, but it's like, I don't know, from Harry Potter, it's like a half-life. It's not, I just didn't have any emotions. I didn't want to do anything. It just, it's not really a life. But yeah, I managed and I didn't act up or anything, but it's, I guess, a form of social control.
Yeah, but you didn't have schizophrenia.
I've had everything according to their diagnosis.
Oh, they've diagnosed you with schizophrenia?
At some point, I was diagnosed.
Or depression or what?
At one point, I was diagnosed with many, many things.
It's common. Many people get multiple diagnoses, 10 or 20 different ones in a lifetime. Yes, sir.
I agree with one thing, that people that are evaluating have an extreme amount of power. And there's no counterpower or counter-evaluation in place here. There's no third-party assessment. The assessment, if there is one, will come from one of their colleagues. That the colleagues won't go against that colleague. So where do we get a third-party assessment of the situation if it is politically motivated? That's a real problem. And
yes.
Because of the monopoly. Not only are doctors powerful status-wise, but they're legally very powerful. Their signature legally is extremely powerful,
yeah.
And there's no counter assessment, counter action to that. So I'm finding that politically, that situation is very dangerous. Any physician has that extreme amount of legal power. A second thing is, the professional associations might not go against a doctor or a lawyer.
Yeah.
So that's another problem. A third thing I think is fadism. Like, why are certain cures being promoted at certain times in history? We had electric shock treatments in the 50s. We have Prozac very recently. These are fads. They're not, nobody's going to tell me that suddenly everybody needs treatment. So there is a physiological dimension. There's some kind of social factor here that's operating.
Oh, yeah.
Societal.
May I suggest? It's a slander game, because when you whisper the word schizophrenic, it's a slanderous game, and it starts out with the public trustee taking your bank account because you can't manage it. It ends up with me. If I write a will, it's no good. Somebody can grab what little I have in the bank, because it's when you whisper that word, paranoid schizophrenic. That means a police officer can empty his gun into me if he has my clinical records in his police car. This is what Chief Fantino tried to do months before he lost his job as a Toronto police chief.
Excuse me, did you repeat that? Chief Fantino tried to do what?
He tried to get clinical records of the dam in his police cars, so that a police officer could empty his service revolver into him, like they emptied a policeman off, emptied his service revolver into Lester Donaldson.
Yeah, yeah. They get away with it all the time if the person is labeled with some mental
illness. Yeah, well, Edmund Hugh was very vulnerable. He suffered the same fate as Lester Donaldson.
It's good that you brought this up. If I may just say, Lester Donaldson, for some people who may not know, is a black man who was labeled schizophrenic. He was shot at point-blank range in his own home. For carrying a knife, he was barricading himself in when the police came in. In fact, I was at the inquest for a while, and I just want to add a few facts, but you're right. The police have access. If you've been locked up, then they have a computer file. It's called CPIC. This is a national file. If anybody who's been locked up, any involuntary patient or a prisoner, they can find out if the person, what, that they can get some of your history on the computer.
Yeah, but I thought that
the police have access not to your medical file, but to the fact, some facts that if you've been locked up, they can find that out.
Okay, so
and
this
I'm just saying,
this is part of the whole forensic side, what we call the mental, I'm going to put it, the mental patient who has this revolving door. There's three revolving, this is what I've heard. One is the hostels, or what we call the drop-in centers for a place to live, shelters, jail, which is another one, or homelessness. And it seems to be this revolving door of not really being able to fit into society, so that they are mental health patients are marginalized and, you know, shunted aside.
Oh, yeah.
And not supported in a way that's conducive. We need to build more social housing to support individuals,
yeah,
who have these kinds of so-called labels, but at least can live some kind of productive, mm-hmm, life in society. The issue today is, and I saw it on your economic platform, is that we don't have enough good jobs for people, that the economy is in shambles, no matter what you want to say, and that it causes an incredible amount of stress in people's lives. And if you lose a job or you're not making enough money, you feel a sense of frustration. And yes, the anxiety and all of that adds up, and then you can explode.
Absolutely right about the revolving door, which is a shame, a national shame. We have alternatives that the psychiatrists don't bother to tell their patients about. Non-medical, you know, we have peer support, drop-ins, social service that are mainly controlled by psych survivors in Toronto, like Sound Times, the Gerstein Center has helped people where it's a short-term stay. We have no safe houses. We have some supportive housing, but there's problems about that too, but we don't have enough. Where does most of the health money go? You guessed it. The doctors and the hospitals. Not to the survivors who can create non-medical alternatives to keep people out of hospitals, and which would lower the costs of our healthcare system. We have nobody in the Ontario Ministry of Health or the federal department who thinks prevention, who puts their money. If we were serious about preventing people and helping people in the early stages of a crisis, we would let people know. We would have a great variety of safe houses. I mentioned this in the alternatives lecture I gave last year. We should have 24/7 crisis centers, walk in. Like if I broke up with a close friend and I'm depressed and I'm walking around the block, I know I can't call anybody, but I know two or three blocks down the road there's a walk-in. Not a clinic, but a walk-in place, a crisis center staffed by people like myself that I can talk with and can listen, and who won't threaten to lock me up in chemtrail or drug me with Prozac. That's what I need. And we don't have drug hotlines staffed by psychiatric survivors. All we have is a hotline control. Well, if a person is suicidal, they may talk to you. There is a hotline for that, but I'm not too confident that they're very, very competent or supportive. I don't think, you know, what we really need, are grassroots, real community places that don't threaten to send people or to lock them up. We have a lockup society. That's what we got, unfortunately. And Harper wants to build more prisons. And you can be sure.
Issues in those prisons, yeah. And that's what will happen.
You can be sure. He says, well, there's too many psychiatric patients in prison. Oh, so what the solution is? To send them to CAMH or to keep people in prison longer and people come out worse? As we know, prison isn't the answer. I used to be involved in prison abolition. Now I'm involved in psychiatric abolition. We don't think in a preventive way. But what I would urge people to think about is, you know, why do we label so many people? What is this fascination with labeling, which has no scientific basis? You know what I call the shrinks suffer from, which you won't find? compulsive labeling disorder, which you won't find in this book.
Well,
they can't resist. And by the way, DSM-5, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual number 5, is coming out next year with even more labels, close to 400. Who decides? It's a bunch of 20 people, mostly privileged men, white privileged men, yes, sit around a table, a psychiatrist, upper class or whatever, usually, who make a decision, oh, well, maybe we should add bipolar 3 to the bipolar 2. Yeah, we should add depressive psychosis with manic overtones, or, you know, they make these up with these really, you know, it would be totally laughable if it wasn't tragic. Because, as I said, labels have consequences. Whether you call somebody with the N-word, you call somebody a mental patient, you call somebody schizophrenic, you call somebody bipolar, you call someone ADHD, these are serious. Because why is it serious? It gives the psychiatrist a license. Oh, well, there's a drug. And by the way, hearing voices is not a symptom. There is I've been educating myself, and I urge you to do. There's on the net, on the internet, there's something called intervoice.net. An international, people who are been labeled voice hearers, usually because they've been labeled also schizophrenic, hearing voices, where they've started to take charge of their own voices and start to understand what the voices are saying. The shrinks don't. All you have to do if you want to get yourself locked up and labeled schizophrenic, is just to admit that you're hearing a voice. Voices are from people trying to struggle with some unresolved crisis or trauma in their lives. They're talking to themselves. This is important. This is a communication with the person has with himself. But you think that kind of understanding is coming from a psychiatrist? No, it's a symptom. Well, we got a drug for that, so we'll stifle your voice. In fact, it doesn't get rid of the voices. Now, some voices are serious, can be command, but shutting them up and muffling and stifling them with drugs is not the answer. But that's what's going on at CAMH. That's what's going on at St. Mike's. That's what's going on in every damn psychiatric ward. You hear voices? Drug, man. Get Joe needs to be drugged. Give him a medication.
Can you just tell us about more about alternative therapies?
Six St. Joseph houses for artists and for people who are interested in creativity. And I was just doing a calligraphy course there. They offer yoga. It's at Six St. Joseph and Yonge, so it's just above Wellesley. And you can drop in. All the stuff is free. Everything from yoga to cartooning to you name it. But that's the kind of thing where it's spirituality. There's courses on miracles and yoga. So it's there to help people.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay.
There are alternatives. If anybody knows of a doctor, I'd love to get this information. If you know a doctor who actually for real lets people know before he prescribes a drug or soon after that there are alternatives to an antidepressant or to a neuroleptic antipsychotic drug or to going into hospital, to tell his or her patients about non-medical alternatives or self-help or peer support groups, I'd love to hear. I've lived here over 50 years in Toronto, and I haven't heard of one physician that takes the time to mention alternatives, yet they are legally required to under informed consent, because before a doctor gives you any treatment, whether it's surgery for your heart, whether it's aspirin or anything, he has to let you know about the risks probable or the real effects and the alternatives. And this is a damn shame. But you think that the media care about this? We care about it. It's our lives. Why should people have to be stuck in a psych ward or keep taking Thorazine or any of the drugs or get shocked, for God's sake? There are alternatives. And unfortunately, in an election year, I haven't heard. It's too bad that that didn't make an election issue. I think we'll have to end pretty soon. It's after, is it 8:30? But somebody have something really pressing that he or she wants to say that hasn't been said?
I think, you know, you take that book, Catcher in the Rye.
Catcher in the Rye, famous, I remember that. I read
it. That guy would have been hospitalized, right?
Alden Coldfield. Absolutely, he would.
Or a doctor, even.
Lots of...
Here, just look, just read it. You know, the guy is alienated. He's got no contact with reality, yeah. According to the medical profession.
Yeah, according to
that. That guy is a candidate for institutionalization. And here is a famous author.
I know.
Talking about teenage alienation.
May I just add one thing before we leave? First of all, I want to say a huge thank you to people coming out and make a special trip tonight. And I applaud you. So thank you for coming out to listen and to listen to others. And I hope that there'll be two more lectures. On the schedule here, the handout, February 24th is the next one on the biological psychiatry, which is responsible for a lot of the labeling, which is Dr. Ewan Cameron, I'll be talking about, who performed and was funded by the Canadian government some of the worst experiments in the history of medicine, and what his legacy is. So it'll probably be, I'm not sure what room it will be in, but if you email me, I'll try to, and I'll put my email up here. You can find out the room number, but I usually don't know until 3 weeks before. So thank you, and
thank you.
I hope you.